Hi, I'm Lawrence Hobgood, a jazz pianist and composer-arranger, among other things, and I'd like to tell you about my latest recording project, Tessitera. Tessitera is music I wrote pairing my New York-based jazz trio with string quartet. The trio comprises drummer Jared Schoenig, bassist Matthew Cloese, and myself. The string quartet is New York-based Ethel. Tessitera is arrangements of what I think of as iconic songs from various eras, especially focusing on the popular songs I grew up listening to in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, like Sting's Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic, and their potential as vehicles for jazz improvisation. A lot of people have asked me, why this project? Why this instrumentation? The sound of jazz music is more commonly associated with certain woodwind and brass instruments, tenor and alto saxophones, trumpets, etc. So why was I drawn to pairing classic jazz trio with string quartet, something much more associated with classical music? From about 2006 to 2009, when I was still working with the vocalist Kurt Elling, we developed a special performance project, meaning it wasn't initially intended to be released as a record, based on John Coltrane's now iconic album with singer Johnny Hartman. The chosen instrumentation was the trio with string quartet and the great Ernie Watts on tenor saxophone. It not only wound up becoming a record issued by the Concord label, it was a live recording of a concert at Lincoln Center, and it won us a Grammy.
If I should write a book for you, that brought me fame and fortune too.
Writing the arrangements for that record put me back in touch with how much I love string quartet. Real string quartet writing, which is specifically two violins, viola, and cello, is very different from string section. String section typically implies writing that's generally simpler, unison melodic passages, longer notes likely supporting busier activity in other parts of the orchestra or ensemble. Whereas in string quartet writing, the four parts are, for one thing, mostly very independent, both harmonically and rhythmically. This in turn increases the likelihood that much of the time each individual part will itself be fairly active. coordinating for such parts not only requires a high level of musicianship, but also a stylistic and conceptual bond between the players. It's why the great string quartets have a set personnel that may change very little over time, even decades. You could say that this managed coordination between different, often complicated parts breaks into two considerations, horizontal and vertical. Let me explain. Formalized Western harmony is a big subject, but for the moment, think of harmony as the structures we call chords, simultaneous soundings of multiple tones, the kind of thing the piano was made to do. Although string instruments are sometimes technically able to play multiple tones simultaneously, called double or triple stops, in general they are one note at a time instruments. So their parts read as single note lines, which we visualize as being horizontal, mostly because that's literally how they appear on the page, read from left to right, just like words in a book. Let me play on the piano a series of notes, a little piece of a line a violin might play. It's not hard to imagine a violin playing a line like that. It's moving by fairly fast, so chances are that if you wanted to add some simultaneously played notes, you'd need to have, for instance, a second violin play them. On the piano, that would sound like this. Now, when those two lines are played together, you can hear the horizontalness, or linearness, but also in spots you can hear the beginning of some verticalness, too. Any place where two tones are being sounded at the same time. Listen to it again. You can hear how, if we added a third part, things would get even busier in a horizontal sense and also, maybe thicker is the right word to use, in a vertical sense. Since I only have two hands, let's add the cello and viola and hear an actual string quartet playing the whole idea. That's from the introduction to my arrangement of Blackbird. The cello is playing with the bow, or arco, but the other players are playing pizzicato, meaning they're plucking the strings with their fingers. That sound has a percussiveness that's really cool and also increases the sense of their agility. As you can hear, it kind of pops. Listen to it again. That little clip epitomizes what I love about string quartet. Individually independent lines which, when played together in tight formation, sort of add up to a musical dance for the ears. In that example, the horizontal aspects are probably more evident than the vertical ones. So let's turn to a more purely chord-like or vertical phrase. In that example, there's basically no busy linear or horizontal activity. It's a series of vertical events, or chords. If you want a string quartet to play that, the first violin has to play. While the second violin plays. While the viola plays. While the cello plays, so if they play those four lines together, it sounds like this. That short passage is the first couple measures of the introduction to my arrangement of Georgia on My Mind. let's hear the recorded version from Tessa Terra. That answers the instrumentation part of the original question, why this project at this time? The sound of string quartet combined with a piano-based drum trio is a wonderful, distinctive, timbral proposition. Jazz chamber music, if you will. But the implicit other half of the question remains. Why this material? Why these particular songs? To me, jazz isn't so much about what you're playing, but rather how you're playing it. When Bud Powell, Burton Diz, Art Tatum, Coleman Hawkins, etc. played tunes by Gershwin, Ellington, Rodgers and Hammerstein, Jerome Kern, Harold Arlen, Cole Porter, and on and on, they were taking the popular tunes they'd heard growing up and adapting them to jazz, to improvisation. The melodies, rhythms, and harmonies in those now classic songs lent themselves to the emerging requirements of small group jazz and bebop, negotiable phrasing, rhythmically interesting melodies, and sequences of underlying harmony, chord changes, that, when adjusted for the individualism of emerging jazz styles, practically begged to be source material for improvisational exploits. Why should the great songs of the likes of Sting, Paul Simon, Carole King, Stevie Wonder, Burt Bacharach, Roberta Flack, Paul McCartney, be any different? Over the last 20 years or so, I've learned to love adapting this music I grew up with to be workable in a jazz setting. It started as arranging work I did for singers, most notably the aforementioned Mr. Elling, but for quite a few others as well. As I got drawn into it, I became more interested in the potential for instrumental versions. After all, why should singers get to have all the fun? Thank you. my arrangement of Nat Cole's classic tune, Straighten Up and Fly Right, for my trio record, Honor Thy Fathers, with John Patitucci playing bass and Kendrick Scott on drums. That particular arrangement is in 7/4 time. Playing in so-called odd meters has gained popularity amongst jazz improvisers over the last 20 years or so, and with good reason. Basing grooves on divisions of, for example, 5 or 7 beats per bar, instead of the more conventional 4 beats per bar, often leads to a freeing of what I'll call the phrase ear. It's a different musical dance and allows for an expanded set of phrasing choices when improvising. And that's only one of the tools for reimagining songs. Altering the original chord progression or reharmonizing, extending phrases, especially to draw extra meaning out of song lyrics, modulating key centers, and many other compositional techniques can help put cool twists on previously existing songs, especially iconic ones. For Tessitera, the arrangement I wrote of Paul McCartney's Blackbird is a good example of many of these methods. The arrangement's in 7/4 time. The melodic phrasing gets extended pretty much throughout. There are even mid-phrase key modulations in a couple of places. What process leads to believing that these twists and turns can work? Beyond the obvious, which is that the more generally familiar a song is, the more liberties one might be able to take with it because people will still recognize it, there's a composer's and player's instinct about these things, as well as having learned from trial and error. That's crucially important. Let's break the process down a bit. Here's the first phrase played as we're used to it. For my arrangement, I started with two subtle moves. A small adjustment to the melodic rhythm, elongating the end of the first phrase, and then, instead of staying on the root chord, ending that phrase on the 4 chord. That rhythmic elongation in the melody, where the lyric is dead of night, is what establishes the 7/4 meter. Intuiting that this is working, I then took a little liberty with the melody, changing it slightly, mostly because I thought it sounded good on the piano played this way. At that point, I had to follow my instinct about how many beats should separate the phrases. This song is classic for a reason. It's one of the most beautiful melodies ever written in modern pop music. It's elegant. So I wanted to put some open rhythmic space between the melodic phrases, which also helped establish the overall groove. Now I have a direction I feel is working. At that point, the rest of the arrangement kind of writes itself. Well, almost writes itself. There's definitely what I'd call a trees and forest balancing act going on when you're writing like this. Anyway, beginning with the end of the string quartet's intro, here's the first melodic section of my arrangement of Blackbird from Tessitera. Thank you. hope you've enjoyed this Tessitera podcast. You can find a lot more about Tessitera and many other things, from performance schedule to other projects and educational workshops, at laurencehogood.com. That's LaurenceHogood.com. And please consider liking Lawrence Hobgood Music on Facebook, following Lawrence Hobgood Music on Instagram, and my Twitter handle is @LawrenceJazz. There will be more Tessitera podcasts, so until next time, listen well, and thanks for being.